evening for Around Cincinnati. I'm Elaine Deal, thrilled to say that Jack Cassidy is on the other end of the telephone. Jack, going way back, I personally discovered the music of the Airplane when I was in high school. So as a woman, I adored Grace Slick and what she meant for the possibility of women in, you know, what was then a male rock and roll world. But after Grace, you were my favorite Jeffersonian. So would you go way, way back for just a minute? Tell me how you found your way to the bass guitar.
Well, I started playing guitar at age 12 in Washington, D.C. Soon thereafter, I met Norman, who was also from Washington, D.C. But I started playing bass guitar at age 12. My father was a dentist, his brother a doctor, and my mother's family were lawyers. But in the late 20s, my father played a little bit of tenor banjo and a little guitar. And I found these rather abandoned instruments up in the attic when I was about 11 and a half years old. And I just started playing around. He was curious, and one of the guitars had, I think, only four strings on it. And I just started playing around on it. I always loved music, listened to music. My older brother, Charles Cassidy, listened to music, had record collections. But I got a lot of that from my father, who was an audiophile, belonged to the American Jazz Society. And a very young lad, I was listening to a lot of jazz music, a lot of classical music. And, of course, being in Washington, D.C. was a natural crossroads of all types of music, rhythm and blues, jazz, folk music, Appalachian music coming up to the South. So the musical environment in Washington, D.C. was just wonderful. So I found the instrument and started playing around with it. And then it disappeared. And it disappeared in 1956, soon before Christmas. But I didn't really think about it too much. And then Christmas 1956, I was 12, I came downstairs with my two brothers, you know, and the Christmas tree, and there's presents under the tree for everybody, and I looked around, I started to get a little po-faced because there wasn't too much there for me. But on the tree itself was an envelope with my father's handwriting on it, and I opened up the envelope, and it says, "Dear Jack, we wanted to give you your present for Christmas, but it's not ready. It's a guitar, and we're having it restrung. But this entitles you to 12 lessons up at the local music store." And so that got me started off playing the guitar. And it was a great move on their part from a parental aspect, as they saw that I had an interest in it. And they reconditioned the guitar that my dad had, an old Washburn nylon string guitar that they had strung in steel, and put together lessons right away. So I went right in and started learning correctly and learning how to play guitar. From there, later on, I got interested in bass guitar about age 16 when a good friend of mine, Danny Gatton, a wonder kid on guitar, who is now, rest in peace, passed on. And we all played in the same bands together and played a lot in the circuit in Washington, D.C. And he had a summer job lined up. His bass player got very ill that summer, and he asked me if I knew any bass players. I said, no, they're very rare back then, electric bass guitarists. Most all the rhythm and blues bands, country bands, they all had stand-up bass players. So I said, no. He says, listen, Jack, why don't you take the gig? And I said, listen, I'm not a bad. I've never played this. He said, how hard can it be? It's only got four strings. So that's the joke. In any case, I filled in that summer, and that was big money. You know, they can make $115 a week. Of course, playing in the club circuit, that was four to five sets a night and Sunday afternoon sets. But that was big money back then for me as a 16-year-old. And I fell in love with the instrument. Well, that year of 1960, I had borrowed the other gentleman's Fender bass guitar, which was a fairly big neck for my size of my hand. That year, Fender had come out with a jazz bass, which had a more narrow format on the neck, more narrow nut, but it also had two pickups on it for more tonal variations. I got one of those that year that it came out, and played both guitar and bass for a number of years until I was invited to come out, my old pal Jorma Kalkinen, to join the newly formed Jefferson Airplane in 1965.
I should mention that your old pal was responsible for making you do this interview. We talked to him a couple of weeks ago and talked about the very long friendship and musical companionship that the two of you have had. It's really unique in the funky world of showbiz, isn't it?
He and I had a high school band together. And he was playing acoustic guitar. I was playing lead guitar, if you will. In any case, we did a lot of covers. I was 14 and a half then. He was 17, and I was finishing out junior high school, and he was finishing out high school. We had a love of music that we shared, and under other circumstances, with that three-year age gap, we wouldn't have been buddies. But the music brought us together and started a friendship that lasts to this day. I've often said we have reference points of our friendship. The reference points of him coming over to my house and my mom fixing him a roast beef sandwich, or me visiting him while we lived at his grandparents' house, you know, because mm-hmm. his parents were in the Foreign Service and moved around a lot. So our reference points go back to more human things, not associated with starting a band together. I mean, we've had years when we haven't played together, but in general, we've kept our friendship strong for 63 years now.
You and Yorma last year celebrated, was it 50 years of the Electric Hot Tuna Band?
Yes, we had last year. We started doing those songs as Yorma and Jack, you know, probably in 68, 69. And then when we released our first tuna album, we had to come up with a name, and that was Hot Tuna, and that was 1970.
And you're still doing Hot Tuna.
We are indeed. Of course, we've been put back a peg or two with this COVID-19. Yorma's been at his Fur Piece Ranch doing a webcast solo or with a couple of friends of his in the environment out there in Southeast Ohio, where he teaches and has a concert hall. He's been doing those on Saturday nights. And then while he does that, I put the screen down here and play along. And then I post those on the Hot Tuna Facebook, other sites. So far, that's how we've been able to play together, you know. And basically, even though we've been in the Jefferson Airplane and labeled the various rock and roll formats or rock formats, for sure, Yorma and I've always thought myself as basically a folk musician in a sense, because we still love to tour. I mean, aspects of touring, of course, are tiring. You know, he's pushing 80. I'm creeping right up there myself at age 76. But the reality is what keeps you alive, and I think connected in general, is for you to get out there and put yourself in different locations to see what's going on with the people. Yeah. And, of course, that's all this year that's been set aside so much because of the pandemic. But it's going to be very interesting to see how this works out, because that's what we do, is play in front of people and gatherings of people. That's our business. Part of the reason I think we've stayed vital for our fans and people in front of us listening to the way we play is that aspect of us taking that performance that night as the most serious thing it can be that night for those people. So the virtual world that has developed now because of that and all kinds of professions now, I think all of that's going to stay to a certain extent. But people are wanting to be out there in front of other people. And I think we'll just have to bide our time until when the safety factor rises enough to permit it.
Jack, you always looked so cool with your beads and your headbands and your trippy wardrobe. But even though the airplane was only together for what?
Actually, 7 years. Okay. Together 1965 to 72.
It was enough to get you into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and to get you a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. And those awards are very cool. But my favorite award is your Lifetime Achievement from Bass Player Magazine. You, Larry Graham, and James Jamerson. What a trio.
Yeah, what wonderful company. Yeah. When I saw those guys, you know, we were down in the basement waiting, going on, and I looked around the room. I said, this is fantastic. And I don't know whether those guys even knew anything about me. You know, everybody, quite often people live in their own world with their own musical values. But it was a thrill. And it's really interesting to see it in my age group. And I've been often asked, you know, who were my bass guitar heroes and all of that. Well, back when I started playing at age 16 in 1960, there are very few electric bassists out there. In the jazz world, Monk Montgomery, with Wes Montgomery, his brother Wes Montgomery, he broke the mold in the jazz world, much to the chagrin of the purists, by playing a Fender bass with his brother in the jazz group. In the rhythm and blues world, the guys who played with James Brown really broke the mold there. You know, that syncopated playing, you listen to early James Brown stuff. The bass player is playing electric bass guitar, but he's playing more like a stand-up bass line. So that transference over into the bass guitar for the kinds of things that a bass guitar could do unique to that particular instrument didn't really start to develop until later on, where bass guitar started doing some of the syncopation work that the drummer was usually doing. And that's where Bootsy comes in with all that kind of sound. And I've chased the tone more than what people actually played. we're from the jazz world, you know, with Charles Mingus or Scotty LaFaro or Ray Brown, all that. I've tried to bring some of that stand-up bass tone. That's why I play a hollow body instrument primarily. A bass guitar like my Epiphone bass guitar. In the true acoustic world, I've developed over the last 7 years with Tom Rebecki, the Diana bass guitar, true acoustic bass guitar that sounds without being plugged in like a bass in the room, to play across from Jorma with his acoustic guitar. And that's really been my proudest achievement lately, to have a true acoustic bass guitar that will hold its own without feeling like you're going to plug it in.
And it's not an upright?
No, the upright is a violin. I don't play violin. I play guitar. An upright bass, double bass, that's a big violin.
Are you a bass collector?
Well, somewhat. I've got a lot, but I try not to collect too much that I don't play. I'm sitting in my home here in Los Angeles. I got instruments upstairs that I haven't played. I've collected over the years, played somewhat, but not played again. So the short answer is yes, but not in a sense of collecting all styles or collecting just for collecting's sake. I certainly have a lot of Epiphones because I get two every year from the production batch. And now I've had that Epiphone Jack Cassidy bass out for 21 years. I've got a lot of those because that's part of the business of making sure that the quality is good on them. Now, I take every year that a new production line is put out, I take two right off the top and take them right out on the road and test them out to make sure that the quality is good that's out there that people get every day. And then I've got my Tom Rebecki Diana bass, which is dedicated for my late wife, Diana Balfour Cassidy, who passed away in 2012 from cancer. And so those are bespoke instruments, and I've got Diana 1, 2, and 3, and I've got a 4 being worked on with Tom Rebecki up in Hillsburg, California right now. I love experimenting with the different configurations, different sounds. So that's my new endeavor for this period of time in my life.
Well, I know you've got a bunch of your dates rescheduled, things that were canceled by this. I hope you get to play them this year. And then you've got some dates with David Grisman next year?
Yes. We had a July tour, and that's been postponed basically a year. So we'll see what's going to happen the rest of this year. So stay tuned and keep checking, and we will too.
We certainly will, and I really appreciate you giving us some time today.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure. Stay healthy and do all the stuff you're supposed to do out there, folks, and keep well.
Grace Slick said about her first impression of Jack Cassidy, "I'd never heard a bass like that. Jack had this roaring, growling thing that would start at the bottom and twine all the way up." Jack Cassidy is still touring, writing, recording, teaching, still completely immersed in the bass guitar. And while the pandemic has Hot Tuna sidelined from live gigs for now, YouTube is full of performances, photos, interviews, and a lot of fun with my guest, Jack Cassidy. For a link to his music, online workshops, and other performances, visit our website, wvxu.org. For 91.7, I'm Elaine Deal.
So many strings, so much margin for error. Although I've heard it said that the Jack Cassidy signature model bass is always in perfect tune.
It's tuned to the factory.
That's that personal touch.